Thanks very much, Nick. It's a great pleasure to be here taking part in this conference and, of course, to be here in New York again. The topic of my talk today is, or the title is, Will Australia Catch a US Cold? Because there's been a lot of speculation recently about whether events here in the US and also to some extent in Europe will eventually slow down the Australian economy and offset the very positive effect that's coming from China. So I want to address some of that today. If we look back through the 80s and 90s in Australia, the developments in the Australian economy showed a very close correlation with those in the US economy. And it was particularly striking that the recessions of the early 1970s and the early 1980s and 1990s were highly synchronised in the two countries, and they had a lot of common features and common sources. And as a result, it was quite common in the 80s and 90s in Australia to hear the phrase, when the US sneezes, Australia catches a cold. And Australian economists spent a lot of time, including those at the Reserve Bank, looking at this question of why the Australian economy was so highly correlated with the US economy. And we were intrigued by this because the trade flows between the two countries were never particularly large. The US is only a moderately important trade destination for Australia. And the research that was undertaken unearthed various channels that contributed to the close relationship. There's two in particular, I think, that were seen as very important. And the first was that the two economies had very similar economic shocks through that period. And they also followed similar policy responses. So in some ways, it's not surprising they followed similar paths. But second, the financial and cultural links between the two countries were always very strong. And the US is, of course, a very large investor in Australia, and a lot of Australian companies have operations in the US. US economic news also receives very wide coverage through the Australian media. And this, in turn, often promotes very similar movements in financial markets, in business sentiment, and also in consumer behaviour. A scrutiny of this close relationship between the two economies reached its peak around the mid-1990s, which is ironic in some ways because that was around the time the relationship started to change. And certainly by the time we got to the first decade of this century, the paths of the two economies had clearly diverged, whereas the US experienced recessions in 2001 and 2008-09, the economic downturns in Australia around that time were relatively mild. It's been 20 years now since Australia's had a year of negative growth. And this represents the longest period of uninterrupted growth in our history, and it's also, I think, got very few precedents amongst developed economies. So the question is, why have the paths of the two economies diverged? Now, I don't think I can provide a totally exhaustive or conclusive answer to this question, but there are a couple of factors I think we should focus on. The first is that both the 2001 and the 2008-09 recessions in the US were, to a large degree, the consequence of financial misadventure here. The former was, of course, heavily influenced by the collapse of the tech bubble, and the latter by the collapse of the subprime housing market. And Australia was not affected by nearly as seriously by either of these events. In fact, the tech bubble largely missed Australia. In the late 1980s, Australia was constantly being berated as being an old world economy because we did not have a homegrown information technology industry. But as it turns out, being a large or heavy user of technology but not a manufacturer of it ended up being an advantage because our economy wasn't distorted by the tech bubble through the late 1990s, and also it didn't weaken as much in 2001 when the tech market collapsed. That in turn had other benefits because the mildness of the 2001 downturn in Australia meant that the Reserve Bank was able to normalise interest rates quite quickly thereafter. And in the event, this helped Australia avoid some of the worst excesses of the housing markets that built up in some other countries. The Australian housing market was most frothy for the country as a whole around 2002-2003, and it cooled noticeably in 2004 as interest rates rose. And while there have been some significant price increases in particular cities since then, The speculative development of the market has subsided considerably in most states by the time the subprime crisis hit in 2008. So we went into that crisis in good shape. Apart from increase in interest rates, the Reserve Bank also warned repeatedly around that time about the dangers of excessive borrowing and excessive rises in house prices. And I think at the margin, this probably helped cool some of the more speculative activity. It was also helpful that APRA, which is the Prudential Supervisor in Australia, managed to press the banks into maintaining higher lending standards. While there's some subprime lending activity in Australia, it's very contained and mainly in the non-bank lenders. So as such, arrears rates on housing loans have remained quite low in Australia, and Australian banks have of course therefore remained profitable. Australia therefore didn't have a homegrown financial crisis in 2008-09, and its financial institutions have also had less exposure to the US market. So as a consequence, as was the case in 2001, the Australia experienced only a relatively mild downturn in 2008-09. So clearly the fact that Australia avoided the tech bubble and the subprime market problems were important reasons why the economy has done better than the US over that period. But of course the other factor has been the growing role of China in the global economy. In particular, the expansion of China has been an overwhelmingly positive impact for Australia over the last 10 to 15 years. Arguably, Australia is one of the economies in the world that most complements the Chinese economy. It's a large producer of food and energy and basic materials, as well as education and tourism services. And these are all products and services that the Chinese have a strong demand for. At the same time, the limited size of our manufacturing sector and its specialised nature mean that the economy as a whole is not facing wide-scale competitive pressures from China, which a lot of other economies are facing. And as a consequence of this, Australia has experienced the largest rise in terms of trade of any country over this period. And the only country that comes as broadly similar is Chile. So while it's clear that China has had a large influence on the Australian economy, the question is, what does that mean for US developments? Do they still matter? I think the answer to that is yes, they clearly do. They continue to play an important role in shaping financial market behaviour, as well as household and consumer and business sentiment. The point, however, is that over the past 10 to 15 years, these channels have not been powerful enough to dominate the overall economic outcomes, being more than offset by the other influences that I've mentioned previously. So at this juncture, the US and the Australian economies find themselves in very difficult cyclical positions. The US is struggling to recover from a deep recession caused by the subprime crisis, while Australia, having grown for 20 years, is operating with relatively little spare capacity and is investing heavily to meet the growing demand for resources out of China and elsewhere in Asia. So the topical question in Australia at the moment is whether the recent turmoil in global markets will eventually overwhelm the positive effects on Australia coming from the Chinese economy. Now that could happen either because the financial uncertainty undermines consumer and business confidence further and therefore limits consumer and investment spending, or it could be because the turmoil in markets in turn also weakens the Chinese economy and reduces its demand for our resources. Our feeling is that at this stage it's simply too early to be able to answer this question. For one thing, nobody yet knows when or for how long the issues that are causing the financial turmoil will continue. In some cases, these influences go to the heart of institutional arrangements in Europe, so therefore they can't be resolved quickly. It's impossible to know, therefore, how long the turmoil will last or even whether it will escalate further. As yet, there's little in the way of hard economic data that is available for the period since the financial volatility picked up, but let me run through what we do know. I'll start with some observations about China, because A few years ago, the common question was whether the Chinese economy could continue to grow if the US economy slowed. And I think the experience over the last 3 or 4 years have answered that question. The answer is in the affirmative. China has maintained strong growth in the face of the US recession and its the US sluggish recovery. Our reading of the latest batch of Chinese data, which relates to August, suggests that any slowing in the Chinese economy has to date been pretty modest. And that's also confirmed by when we look at data on Australia's shipments of coal and iron ore to China, which have also held up very firm, and the prices of those commodities, of course, have also held up. In Australia, the most comprehensive data on the economy, which is the national accounts, are only available up to the June quarter, and so they predate the period of financial volatility. Those accounts confirm that up to the June quarter, the picture was one of very strong business investment, declining government investment as the fiscal stimulus was unwound, relatively flat dwelling investment, and weak commercial construction. And all this was pretty well in line with what people had been expecting. The one area of the accounts that surprised was the strength of household consumption. Retail sales in Australia had been quite soft for most of the year, and people were generally taking that as a sign that household consumption overall was soft. But the accounts show that household spending outside of retail sales, particularly on services, has been very strong. Households are spending a lot on entertainment, eating out, travel, and particularly overseas travel. At one level, this is surprising given the caution we've seen amongst households at the moment. But on the other hand, it's not so surprising when you think of the ongoing fast rate of increase in household income that's taking place in Australia. Over the past year, household income's up by about 8%. And for a time, this increase in income was being used to rebuild the saving rate. In Australia, household savings risen back to about 10%, which is broadly in line with its very long-run average. In recent quarters, that saving ratio has stabilised, and so the increase in income is now flowing through to spending. The national accounts also show that Australia's GDP continues to be affected by the very severe effects on mining activity from the floods over the Australian summer. And taken literally, the weakest sector of the Australian economy at the moment is the mining sector, where output's fallen by 9% over the past year. But we know this is in the process of being reversed, and so we need to look through that to see what the underlying trend is. And our feeling on that is that underlying mining activity, mining-related activity in Australia, is growing by about 10 to 15% and probably continue to do that over the next couple of years. The rest of the economy, on the other hand, is growing at an annual rate of about 2%. And this is below what would normally be regarded as normal for that part of the economy. This slow pace of growth in the non-mining economy is not simply a matter of soft demand. There are also signs that the capacity of this part of the economy to supply goods and services has also slowed. The two things are driving this. One is the slowing in population growth, with migration having tailed off considerably since the financial crisis. And second, productivity growth in Australia remains quite soft. For growth in the non-mining economy to pick up, it's likely that these trends in productivity and population growth would need to reverse. If we look at the labour market data in Australia, that's available up to August, so it's into that period of volatility. They continue to suggest soft outcomes for employment and a rise in unemployment. Basically, unemployment's risen by about 0.4% over the last couple of months, after having been steady at about 5% for much of the past year. These trends, I think, could be seen as an indication that the economy has slowed recently to a pace below its potential. But on the other hand, there's some aspects of these labour market numbers that have a stronger feel. So contrary to the slowing in the number of people employed, there's been solid growth in the total hours worked in the economy, which is quite different. Also, the very recent rise in unemployment, somewhat surprisingly, has been in the resource-rich states where the mining boom is. And when we look at the number of people on unemployment benefits, that hasn't increased at all. So that's still pointing to unemployment being quite steady. So all this suggests that more information is needed before we can draw any firm conclusions about whether the labour market in Australia is softening. Measures of consumer and business confidence declined sharply in August, as they did in many other countries, following the increase in financial volatility. And of course, this is not surprising. We've had since had a reading for September for consumer confidence, as that's bounced back considerably. So we'll need to wait to see how these swings in confidence affect spending. So far, the recent liaison information we have from retailers suggests that there hasn't been any further significant softening in retail sales. So let me end with a few words on how the Reserve Bank is seeing monetary policy in Australia. The broad context of monetary policy over the past year has been that the overall economy is operating with relatively little spare capacity and is facing a very large boom in investment and a very large rise in national income. The bank's view has been that if this increase in investment is to be accommodated without generating inflationary pressures, other components of spending would need to grow less quickly than might otherwise have been the case. The implication of this is that monetary policy would need to provide an element of restraint. And accordingly, the bank late last year lifted the cash rate to the point where interest rates on most loans in Australia rose to a little above average. From time to time over the past year, the bank has considered whether further restraint would be required, but on balance has concluded on each occasion that the existing policy setting remained appropriate. And an important factor in that was, of course, the very high level of the exchange rate, which is providing a lot of restraint, in particularly in some sectors of the economy. At its most recent monetary policy meeting earlier this month, the board judged that the recent financial volatility could weaken the outlook for demand, and in due course, act to dampen pressure on inflation. On this basis, the board judged that it would be prudent to maintain the current monetary policy stand. In the meantime, financial markets seem to have concluded that the risks are weighted towards the Australian economy weakening sharply over the period ahead. And taken literally, the markets seem to be pricing in a reduction in official interest rates back towards the low point reached after the global financial crisis. There are a number of technical reasons why I think we can't take these readings literally. But nonetheless, markets do seem to have reached a rather pessimistic assessment, and this seems to be based mainly on the assumption that the softness we're seeing back in the United States here at the moment and the volatility in Europe will eventually flow through to Australia. The present situation has some similarities with what happened in 2003. As you recall, there was some sluggishness in the US economy coming out of the 2001 recession. And from late 2002 to about the third quarter of 2003, financial markets in Australia were pricing in cuts in interest rates, largely on the backs of that concerns about that sluggishness in the US recovery. But in the event, that weakness in the US did not flow through to the Australian economy, and interest rates in Australia didn't fall. So let me conclude. It's too early at this stage to judge with any degree of certainty whether Australia will catch a cold from the recent cold from the US. However, given that over the past 10 to 15 years, the Australian economy has been less vulnerable to severe US symptoms, I think there's reasonable grounds for optimism. Until a clearer picture emerges, the bank's approach will be to keep an open mind on these matters and base its assessment on policy on a careful analysis of the data that becomes available. Thank you very much.